are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Gave up the most runs in his last inning pitch than any pitcher in the major leagues because of his manager.
We always love Mike.
That's not
hashtag
even
Mike.
Hashtag fucking idiot Mike. But, you know.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Adam Wainwright, is he fantasy viable in any way this year?
The corpse of Adam Wainwright is not fantasy viable.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
And we're back with another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. And today we're covering the St. Louis Cardinals, which means that we could not do this podcast without our lead prospect analyst, Matt Thompson. Matt, how's it going, bud?
I'm good. I don't know how good we'll be when we get done with this preview, but yeah, it's a interesting offseason. A lot of a lot of the same old talk of spending all this money and have all this cash left over, and then you have a payroll that's less than the year before. So fun stuff.
For those that don't know, where can they reach you on Twitter and such?
MDTopFWFB is the Twitter handle, and right now it's Cardinals had their winter warm up just now. It's every team does their winter fan fest things, and I guess it's been a really testy one with the fans and asking questions and stuff. It's been entertaining to watch. I've retweeted a lot of the good quotes.
I'm sure it has been entertaining with you and the Cardinals. It's always entertaining for sure.
It's it is what it is.
Anyway, as you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB, and let's jump right in. I'm trying to get a little bit quicker on these team previews because I'm going way too long. So
it will be about an hour.
I hope not. First guy I want to talk about is somebody that I think you and I are going to disagree on pretty heavily, and that's Tommy Pham. You are a believer. Why?
I've been a believer for a while, and I've backed it up. You can look up the old podcast on here when we talked about Pham. I just think he hasn't really had a chance to break out because he's off injured guy in the minor leagues, which I would still, that's the thing that's kind of driving down the draft price for me. I'm not willing to pay full price on the numbers because he does have a kind of extensive injury history in the minors. And another problem was that Cardinals of outfield has always been kind of full in front of him. But I mean, everything he did last year, I think is legit. He hits the ball so hard. He does hit the ball on the ground a little bit more than you would like. Over 50% of his batted balls on the ground, but he does have a strong line drive rate, good fly ball weight, rate, launch angle, everything like that matches up. And you always worried about the vision problems he has. He's got a degenerative eye disease. I don't know the name of it. I apologize, but so that's always something to watch out for. But I have no problem taking Pham. I wouldn't take him in the top 50. But I would take him in the top 75. So I don't know if I'd ever really end up with him.
I think it's ludicrous. I just think it's absolutely ludicrous that he's being taken in the top 100. It's not because of his skills, but this is a 30-year-old guy. Like, nothing's going to change with his health. Like, he's going to have durability issues, period, end of sentence. For his career, he hasn't even surpassed 800 at-bats. And he's 30 years old. So I understand he's been blocked, but he has a heavy ground ball, batted ball profile. He definitely outperformed the batting average last year. I think at best you can expect maybe like 270. HQ hasn't projected in the 266 range. Last year his expected batting average, when you factor in the underlying metrics, was 280. But there's no way he is going to end up hitting for 300 again. In my opinion, his speed is his best asset. His speed is his best asset, which I can definitely applaud because obviously we're in need of speed and fantasy nowadays. But for me, it's a durability concern. The batting average is definitely going to slip, and his power isn't his best tool. Like, with a 52% ground ball rate, it's almost like, I mean, he had a 27% home run to fly ball last year. Even in 2016, he had a 35% home run to fly ball. That's just not going to continue. It's like expecting Christian Yelich to continue having a big power profile, despite the fact that he is so ground ball heavy with his batted balls. This isn't an issue of me not liking Pham, because he's somebody that I like to type, but he's the type of player I like to target. That's why I'm so enamored with somebody like Gregory Polanco, because it's the power-speed combination mixed in with good plate skills mixed in with a consistent batting average as well. But his plate skills aren't that good. If you look at the minor leagues for FAM, he was never really exceptional in strikeout rate. Like, he's had some years where he's been pretty good. But for the most part, when he's had major league time, he's been consistently striking out. Last year, even, he was a 26% strikeout rate guy. It's probably about league average. Strong walk rate.
But yeah.
Strong walk rate, I can definitely love that. But again, this isn't me saying I hate FAM. I just hate his cost, because expecting him to go 20-20 this year, which is what I'm assuming people that are taking him in the top 60 picks are hoping for, it's just not something that I feel. It's way too much risk to take on with a pick that early in the draft. If he was going in the top 150 or the top 200, something like that, more of like a flyer range, then I'd be all aboard this. But going in the top 60, it's way too risky. And that's not even, I'm only taking in his skills. I'm not even going into the fact that he's not durable. Like, that's not even being baked into his draft cost right now. People are literally just drafting him as a full-time player that is not going to have any type of injury risk. And I think it's just way crazy. I mean, I understand last year was amazing. Once he came up in May, he was like legitimately the most consistent fantasy player. And that's not me being that's not me like lying about it or anything, like,
no,
being exaggerating.
I don't think I'm over exaggerating his skills either. When I said earlier, I love the profile, I love his attitude. He said, you know, he set goals for himself. This year he wants to be a 30-30 player. I'm not predicting that he's not going to be a 30-30. I'm predicting he's not going to be 30-30. Earth-shattering, right? But what he did last year, he went 23 homers and 25 steals. And you mentioned he didn't get called up till May 5th.
Mm-hmm.
So he left a whole season's whole month worth of at-bats on the table. He played in 128 games and still went 23-25. That's a hell of a player. 95 runs scored, 73 driven in. You know, he's going to hit second right now in the lineup right now. The Cardinals do move around a lot, for better or for worse. So I expect, you know, he's hitting second for now. I think ultimately, though, that's where he settled in last year. So around there, but you know, with Osuna and stuff behind him, I kind of expect 25 homers and, I don't know, 18 stolen bases would be my prediction, I guess, if I have to pull numbers out of my ass. That's kind of where I look at, which is still a very nice player, but like you said, it's not a top 50 player in my mind, but I think it's a top 75, and I'm more aggressive on him than you.
If he goes about 20-20 with a 280 average, then he is a top 60 player.
Right. And I'm saying you're not paying that draft price, though. I was talking about your...
Yeah. That's my main argument, is where he's going. It's not really the profile. I like FAM, like I said, and I have no real issue with him as a player. Like, I hope he goes 30-30, really, honestly, because that would really help out fantasy.
Man, he's been doing some speed training, I guess.
Yeah, I saw that report today that he's been like kind of looking at other people's scores, like Trey Turner, and trying to beat them and
Buxton
stuff.
And stuff. He's trying to get up there. Yeah, I mean, you can't really only add so much speed to what you already have, but he's a workout freak, man. So it's always nice to see that.
Yeah, and I admire people that have drive. So I love the fact that FAM is really trying to hone in on what he's good at and get better. That's an awesome thing. I think
he's also playing center field this year too, which kind of makes it a little bit on the injury scope.
For sure. And I mean, I don't think it's a question. He's going to get injured this year. Everybody gets injured. It's not really a surprising thing. But with FAM, we're just hoping he's not injured for a long period of time, because if he is, like he has been in years past, then it's a problem. But I think the main thing with FAM is just like kind of a broader sense. Like, how do we gauge people like Justin Smoke, Yonder Alonso, these guys that have made these, you know, really massive changes to their approach and to their launch angle and stuff? Do we believe after 1 year that this is something that's going to remain consistent? Do we believe after 1 year that somebody's going to remain durable? Like, that's a broader argument for somebody. And FAM's obviously an example of this, but some fantasy owners are risk averse and they say, hey, I need to see a couple of years of this adjustment before I believe. And then sometimes they miss the boat, right? Because then you're 2 years too late. But then with other people, they would rather take on the risk, because if they end up hitting, that obviously gives them a better opportunity to win. Me, I like to have like a blend of both. I like to take on risk while at the same time be a guy that remains safe at the same time. So I mean, FAM is, for better or for worse, he is a very risky proposition. But if he hits in the you know, 20% chance that he does hit, he could be a 30-30 player. I'm not really discounting that. I think that the speed is more likely to hit than the power. But my main issue, again, is durability and the fact that I think his batting average is going to go down. And, I, you know, top 60 pick is just way rich.
Right. No, I agree with your concerns. I mean, it's just, you know, I've watched him play for a while. I like the profile.
For sure. For sure. Let's move on to Marcell Ozuna. Obviously, somebody that was traded over to the Cardinals. How excited are you to acquire somebody like him?
It's nice, man. They normally don't step out of their comfort zone a little bit and do stuff like this. It's a kind of very rigid organization of how they acquire, you know. Hopefully, you know, I'm kind of baffled, though, by it in the sense of, you know, they talked a big game all offseason. I don't want to make this too long of a rant. They talked a big game all offseason, and they got Ozuna, but then that's it. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah. They had bigger fish. Like, they're not a team that can catch subs. I think if they get another Josh Donaldson-type bat, they are, with the offense anyways. But they talk like they would get something like that, and Donaldson, Machado rumors are involved in all that stuff. And then just end up with Ozuna. There's no slight against Ozuna because he's a hell of a player, but it's kind of a disappointment just because he's not going to move the needle himself that much for what's one guy. And plus, I mean, I don't think, to get to his numbers, 312 average, 37 homers, 124 RBIs. I don't think he repeats any of those numbers this year. Yeah, he's going to a slightly better ballpark for right-handed power. Miami is the third worst park. St. Louis is the fifth worst. So it's a little bit of a jump, but not one that should move the needle much. Do think he got a little lucky with the homer per fly ball. I am encouraged by the walks. The walks took a significant uptick, even when in the lineup with Stanton. Ozuna was still walking at a significant rate. But I can't see him hitting 37 homers. I'm going to settle in for about 32, 33. I don't think he's going to hit 312. I'd settle in about 275, 280. But that's still a nice presence in the middle of the lineup. I just, you know, I can't. He's not going to repeat last year.
Absolutely agree. I'm full of void on Ozuna at his current ADP. I think that he is more of a top 100 player. Right now he's going as a top 50 player. Enough said, really. I think that he's a solid. But
players that get traded always get some sort of boost. It never fails. Every offseason you get traded, you get boosted in your ADP. It's really strange.
Yeah, he, like you already mentioned, he definitely overperformed in home runs. Like, I don't consider him a 40 home run threat. I think he's more of like a 25 to 30 home run guy. And 120, yeah. Well, obviously, and 124 right. RBIs, we can't expect that again. 90 runs scored, yeah. Etc. So like, he just overperformed in every single fantasy category. So obviously he's going to have a career year that ended up being like a $30 year, $33 to be exact. So like, right now, if I'm putting him into a projection formula for a roto dollar value, I'll put him as like a $23 to $25 player, which is still amazingly good and might actually end up being okay for a 50th pick overall, but still it's way rich for me. I expect him to take a pretty significant downturn.
I do like him hitting fourth in this lineup because he's got three on base percentage monsters in front of him. With projected lineup being Fowler, Pham, and Carpenter, those are three monster OBPs. So the RBI chances should definitely be there. It's just the power output I question.
Sure. Let's move over to another outfielder, Dexter Fowler. How you feel about him this season? Anything changed from this year, from last, or anything?
No, I think he should stay healthier. I mean, last year that was the biggest problem with him, is he was off the field for a lot of nagging injuries. He had a calf injury. I think he had a wrist injury for a while. Nothing serious, but I think he had two or three separate stints on the DL, and you know that's. He had a heel injury, a hip injury, a back injury, a shoulder, a quad, and a wrist injury that, you know, limited him a little bit. He's going to be playing right field now, so he should be healthier in the sense he should stay on the field a little more because he's not a good center fielder. The power took a significant jump. And I don't know if the stolen bases will ever bounce back. He only had 7 last year as opposed to 20 and 13 the years prior. I wouldn't even project him for more than 10, to be honest. But I do think he can hit, kind of shocking, but I think he's a 20 to 25 homer bat just with the power output that I saw. I don't know what you think. I know he's getting older. He's going to be 32, but that's not ancient. He still should be a serviceable player. I mean, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, he's going at a fair cost. He obviously gets a bump in on-base percentage formats because he has a 13% walk rate.
Right.
For his career, which is where I typically will target a guy like Fowler. His batting average will never be spectacular, but I agree that I am worried about the speed because, you know, the last couple of years we're seeing a little bit of drops in his overall speed production. The opportunities have gone down, so that's probably playing a big role. If you're not getting the green light, then obviously you're not going to steal any bases, but his speed score has also gone down a little bit. I still think that there is a opportunity for him to rebound there. Like I wouldn't be shocked if he ended up with another 13 stolen bases this year or somewhere in that vicinity. I don't think we'll see 20 like we saw in 2015, but he also played a full year in 2015. Like that was the lone season where he finally put it all together and didn't really have any injuries. if I'm going into this year, I'm expecting another 400 to 450 at bats, which means you're going to, you'll get a player that's kind of full time, but will obviously have some injury problems.
8 to 12 bases on that projection, I would
think. Yeah, and I think the power is going to remain the same too. I think he'll probably offer double digit power, double digit steals with an exceptional on base percentage and a pretty solid average. Like last year, the average major league batting average was somewhere in the 255 range. I think that he will definitely be above average there. But overall, I like him. I think that of the market value on some of these outfielders, Fowler probably presents the best buying cost because you are getting a good percentage of what, say, like Tommy Pham offers, but you're getting it at a significant discount. Obviously, right. He doesn't have the same upside, but you are Fowler's an example of a guy that if you miss out on some of these speed guys earlier, some of these power speed guys early, he offers kind of a good percentage of that later in the draft. And that's really what I enjoy about him is that his cost has never been high because he's never really been able to put together, except for one season, a whole year of durability. So.
Yeah, I mean, I like this outfield. I'm aggressive on all three of these guys to an extent. And I think Fowler, you kind of put him in the same category as like a Brett Gardner.
Sure.
I think I would prefer Fowler to Gardner if I had to pick, only because I play mostly OBP leagues, so that's why I would do that. But, I mean, the numbers stack up pretty well. And I'm like, I think Fowler, you know, like I said, I think he's a threat for 25 home runs this year, which sounds crazy. But look at the metrics last year. Look at the numbers, and they're in line with that. So.
If he played a whole year, then I can understand. Right. And the difference is
part of moving him to the corner might keep him healthier and get him in the lineup more. So,
yeah. And Gardner really is kind of the full-time version of Fowler because he ends up playing pretty much full seasons every year. You kind of have sporadic downturns in his production on random years, but for the most part, he's a 15-15 type guy, 20-20-ish type guy. So that's what really Fowler could do if he was a full-time player. But usually we end up getting a couple months kind of, axed away because he ends up being injured for some reason. But anyways, you get the gist on Fowler. Let's move on. Let's talk about the infield. So Matt Carpenter is looking like he will be the opening day third baseman for this team. Yeah, just kind of a Swiss Army knife of sorts for the Cardinals. Just somebody that can always play all around the diamond. He's officially played everywhere in the infield at this point, right? Throughout his career, not shortstop, but it's everywhere.
Yeah, significant time too, not just played, right?
Yeah, like full years, like full seasons.
Right, and last year the breakdown was 120 games at first, 13 at second, and 16 at third. So in some leagues he's already third base eligible. Some leagues he won't be. Obviously, that's the position he's going to start the year off. He had a weird year, man. He kind of took the launch angle thing to heart, probably too much. He was in the National League high in fly ball percentage.
51%, yes.
That's obscene. That's an obscene number. And it really didn't benefit him. 2016, he was on his way to his career best season until he had an Achilles problem an oblique problem that pretty much stopped his season in his tracks and tanked 2016, and kind of want him to get back to that type of player if we can. That's the goal here. But now I think he's going to hit in the middle of the Cardinal lineup now, hitting third for now anyways. But I think, call me crazy, but I think he's never done it before. But I think if he can stay healthy, kind of like Fowler, I think he could be a 30-homer guy.
I agree.
He's elite in OBP, like absolutely elite in OBP leagues. I mean, probably a top 12 first base option in OBP formats. And right in regular 5x5, I think he's in about the 15 or so range at first base because he's not third base eligible yet in most formats. But, you know, I think you're looking at it. If you can get him to play your corner this year, you're doing a very nice job in your drafts.
I agree. I like him a lot. Overall, last year he was going about 70 in overall ADP, and this year he's going 180 overall in current NFBC draft. It's insane. It's insane. Somebody that already he has really good underlying power metrics, already hits the ball in the air way more than enough. The batting average will fluctuate, but I'm okay with that. He's been a consistent 270 guy for the majority of his career. Last year ended up getting a 280 BABIP, so obviously some positive regression looming for somebody like Carpenter. I think we're going to see upticks everywhere for him. There's no way he ends up with 69 RBI like he did in 2017 based on hitting third in the lineup. I like the multi-positional eligibility he probably will accrue as the season goes on. I'm on board. So I think Carpenter is an absolute steal where he's going. He's probably one of my favorite buys from this team at large. And he's somebody that just will – you talk about 30 home runs. He already did that in 2015 essentially. But I think 30 to 35 isn't out of the question. Based on his batted ball profile, his hard contact, his underlying power metrics, his home run to fly ball rate, like there's just nothing here that tells me that he isn't a 30 home run guy. I believe.
Right. And it's worth noting too, I touched on 2016. He was on his way to, you know, his career best season. In the way the ballpark is in St. Louis, it gets hot and real hot in the summertime and real humid. The ball flies onto the ballpark in the summer. He missed most of his time in the summer. And with the guy with his, normally I wouldn't factor that in, but with his, how heavy of a fly ball approach he has, when you miss time when the ball carries the most, that's going to hurt your numbers a lot.
Absolutely. So,
keep that in mind.
Let's turn over to shortstop, where I know you are in love with this guy, Paul DeJong.
See, I wouldn't say love. I'm very skeptical.
You have been his saving grace in every single chat that we've been a part of. Like, you've been like, I believe in DeJong. I believe in DeJong. I believe in Pham.
I believe in DeJong from the aspect that he's a little bit safer of an offensive profile, I think, than people are giving a little credit for, because he hits the ball so damn hard every time. That's one thing I know. I've been being a Cardinal fan, everyone knows. I was talking to Justin about this, you know, not in a podcast, just, you know, before a podcast or before a show we were talking. And I really followed DeJong's career hard because he went to my alma mater, Illinois State, and then he got drafted by my favorite team. So I didn't want to, like, push him too hard because I thought people would, you know, oh, you're just biased because he went to your college, any place with your team. But honest to God, he hits the ball so hard that it put himself on the map in my eyes. Because you'd watch him play on MILB TV, the numbers would be ordinary, but he just had crazy exit velocity just off that you could just tell by your naked eye. And then they moved him to short and messed with that in the Arizona Fall League, and some scouts said that they thought he could do it. He came up and played short all season. Well, I say all season. He got 417 at-bats, and he was a pretty good shortstop. He's making some plays that Cardinal shortstops haven't made in years just because they kind of neglect the position. But I think I'm taking the over on the power projections this year for this guy. He hit 35 last year between, you know, St. Louis and AAA, hit 25 in St. Louis. I understand the concerns. The walk rate is terrible. The contact rate isn't good. But if you play in a standard 5x5 non-OBP league, he didn't kill you last year. He had 263, I believe he hit. Let me double check that. Yeah, he had 285 in St. Louis. He's not going to hit 285 again. He's going to hit about 260, in my opinion. But, you know, that 260 would probably come with an OBP hovering around 300. That's not great. But he's going to hit 35 home runs at shortstop. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, he's not. Get the fuck out of here.
No, he's going to, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, no. All right. So this is my thing. Like,
I just looked at a projection system from a very good resource that both of us use. 34 home runs is the projection. So eat it.
All right. So here's my thing. You and I look at what? When we're looking at minor league process, when we're doing our minor league shows, what are we looking at? What are we looking for the most?
And plate skills. Plate skills. And number two for me is exit velocity and stuff like that. But we don't have minor league data for that. Whenever I can find it, I look at that. But it's not there.
Obviously. Listen, I'm not going to deny his power. I think that DeJong has legitimate power. Like, obviously, it's pretty obvious. Based on the fact that he hit 25 home runs and 400 at-bats, essentially, last year, like, he obviously has power, but my problem is the plate skills. And whenever you can't make enough contact and you can't get on base, then you can't really help your run in RBI numbers. On top of that, his batting average is not going to be 260. Based on his plate skills, I'm thinking he's like a 250 hitter, maybe less, to be honest. I mean, he just hasn't shown it long enough. I understand he's young, and I also understand that there's been, you know, spots in the minor leagues where he's been really good. And I don't necessarily think that he is like somebody that's going to completely flame out, but going 150 as a guy that is going to hit probably 20 to 25 home runs just based on the fact that his plate skills aren't good enough, I think we're really going to be in for a very sobering moment for people that believe in Paul DeJong like that. Last year, he, you know, had a very productive season, and it still put him at where on the shortstop player rater, 21st. And that was just among shortstops.
Right.
The game that we play in nowadays in fantasy, we don't need power guys. Like, we need guys that are going to help in runs, batting average, stolen bases. Those are the more appealing options now. And at shortstop, we can get guys that hit for power. Manny Machado was a guy that could hit for power at shortstop last year. You had to pay a premium to get him. But even Marwin Gonzalez was absolutely free. He was absolutely great last year. Didi Gregorius, another guy you can get late. I mean, there's so many middle infield options that either give us power or other utility options that can give us power that we don't need it like that. So paying a top 150 pick for a guy like DeJong that A, hasn't proven it over a course of a full season, B, has pretty mediocre plate skills to begin with, and C, is only offering us something in power that we can get anywhere else, it just doesn't offer a lot to me at pick 150. Even if he goes top 170, I'm really not feeling it there. So that's right. The only reason I'm not really big on DeJong. I can definitely be, I guess, proven wrong this year if he ends up hitting 280 plus this year again and has 30 bombs and does pretty well, like it has relatively the same plate skills, then I will believe more. But I think we're going to be in for some BABIP regression, and overall, if you're not getting on base as much as you were the prior season and you're not making as much contact, then obviously you're not going to hit as many home runs.
You know who he is?
Nine numbers. Who?
He's the guy that everyone thought Addison Russell would be on offense.
You think? I don't know. I thought Addison Russell would always be a little bit better plate skills-wise.
No, not really. He probably got rushed up a little bit, but the walk rates for him aren't anything special. They're actually below average. And I mean, I know below average would be an upgrade for DeJong, but DeJong's plate skills in AAA last year were exactly the same as the major leagues. So I think it's something that could stabilize for DeJong, and I still pronounce his name differently every time. I've heard it so many different ways, but
yeah, I just go by DeJong, but it could be DeJong.
I think it's DeJong, but
I'm just gonna call him Paulie D.
Paulie D. That's his Twitter handle, the real Paulie D.
We're finished. That's what he is, Paulie D.
Right, but no, I like him going forward. Again, I want to stress the upside here is minimal because he doesn't run. And I think the batting average is definitely going to drop, but I think the powers will go up. But you can, but like you said, you can find the power, but not at shortstop. So
let's move to Colton Wong, who I still kind of believe in, and he's going absolutely free. How about you?
I believe in the sense that he should play more than he does because he's the best defensive outfielder on that roster, or infielder, best defensive infielder on the roster.
Did he change positions?
Right. He actually did play the outfield last year or two years ago. Don't do that again. There's a famous gif of him like diving for a ball and landing on his face that gets played all the time.
Tyler O'Neill-esque?
yeah, actually, from the Futures game. Yeah, pretty much. But the thing with Wong, his walk rate had a nice bump up last year, which is encouraging. He's always kind of wanted to hit leadoff and kind of gave, you know, would always kind of drop that in interviews like, oh, I'm doing, how's your game? Oh, it was good today. I want to hit leadoff. Like, he would just completely come back on, like, unrelated things. It was kind of became kind of a joke, but...
How many more years are on his extension?
Man,
a couple more, right? Wasn't it like four, a five-year extension?
Might be four with the option years, which they will obviously pick up because they're cheap, and he's a good player. He's just... He might be one of those players that's a good real-life player, but not a fantasy guy. I think the home run offside's capped at about... Which I... You know, I thought he was... Coming up, he was a threat to hit 20 home runs. He just doesn't have that in him. Which I thought he did in the minor leagues, but I think he's probably capped at 12, maybe 15 on a really good year. But I think he can go 15-15 on a really good year, not predicting that this year. But he is entering the age 27 season, if you believe in any of that sort of thing. And he was nicked up a little bit last year, had a back injury, had a tricep injury, and I believe he had a hip injury. So I think he's got a little bit of upside, and like you said, you're paying nothing for him. So he's intriguing in that aspect. But I'm not targeting him and not going out of my way to get him. But if I end up with him, it'll be not as a starter at second base. It'll be as a reserve player.
How often did he lead off last year?
Once or twice.
That's it? Yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah. What my hope would be if I draft somebody like Wong late is that Fowler gets injured at some point, and then Wong can kind of
Carpenter,
step in.
Carpenter, though, would probably do it too, you know?
Sure, and he has a better walk rate, but... I like Wong. I mean, he definitely doesn't have the power that we thought he could. You know, the 12 home runs he hit in 2014 was probably the cap, like you already said. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I think, though, if he can end up getting, like last year he had 350 at-bats. He had 4 home runs, 8 stolen bases, .285 average. The average, I think, is legit. I'm on board his plate skills, especially his walk rate.
Significant improvements all across the board last year.
Yeah,
just they didn't show in the counting numbers, so they're not noted. You know what I mean?
No, he's overall a very, I guess, polished hitter. That's probably the best word to describe him at this point, because he has so many reps in the minor leagues, and he also has, you know, accrued a good amount of at-bats in the major leagues as well, over 1,600 so far in his career. Only 27, though, and I think we kind of forget that with him. The power, I don't think, will take any type of leap, but I do think the batting average is stable. He still has enough speed, in my opinion, to be a double-digit base stealer. So if you end up getting, like, you know, 400, 420 at-bats from him, he ends up stealing 10, 12 bases and hits 8 to 10 home runs. Like, that's a nice little player, a good little batting average on him, some walk rate. Like, that's not a bad player or profile for a top 400 pick, essentially, is what he is. So I like Colton Wong. I think he's definitely an NL-only guy, firmly an NL-only middle infielder. But I also think in deeper formats, you can take a shot and just see what happens. I mean, he's still young enough that he can really start to improve on certain aspects. Like we've already said, I think the power is capped. But in a game where we can get power anywhere, somebody like Wong can really help us out in other categories. And that's really, if you're looking at the DeJong profile versus, or sorry, the Pauly D profile versus somebody like Wong, the Wong profile is the one that I'm gravitating towards, because that is just becoming few and far between. And you also have guys like Adam Eaton this year that a lot of people will probably forget about that will be really important for fantasy leagues. So, yeah, I'm down for some Colton Wong. Let's transition over to first base, who right now, the starting first baseman for your St. Louis Cardinals is Jose Martinez. Scale 1 to 10, how you feel about that?
6.
A 6?
I don't mind it. You know, you got Judd Jerko, who's going to play a lot at third, and that's not a bad, you know, guy to have around either. But I'm going to give you some numbers with Jose Martinez. There's a Fangraphs article I'm going to dig into by Dave Cameron. Gives you the insight. The Cardinals are a big Statcast data team. Grichik, Pham, DeJong, Pauly D. You know, they're a big Statcast data launch angle. Tyler O'Neill, they like guys like that. And Martinez is that guy. Top 10 exit velocities in 2017. The only guys ahead of Jose Martinez: Aaron Judge, Nelson Cruz, Miguel Sano, Joey Gallo, Chris Davis, Giancarlo Stanton, Paul Goldschmidt, and Manny Machado. Jose Martinez comes in right after them. Now, and then he's top 5 by weighted WOBA. He was a bit unlucky. The only guys ahead of him there: Judge, Trout, Votto, JD Martinez. That's a hell of a company to be in. Probably 4 of the best hitters, well, power hitters in the game right there. And then, you know, you look at, to dig even deeper from this article with Dave Cameron, the highest WRC plus and going the opposite way. If you watch Jose Martinez play, all of his power is to right center field. He doesn't really pull the ball for power that much. JD Martinez was the best hitter on the opposite way at 321 WRC plus. Jose Martinez was second at 309. So he's got big power. He's a big dude. He's like 6'7", 215 pounds. So he's a big dude, but he's skinny and lanky. It's really weird for a guy of this size, and Jose Martinez, you know, in his build, he's more of a contact guy than a big power guy, only because he's not a power guy because he lacks the strength or anything like that. He's lacks in power because he hits the ball on the ground a little bit too much. But when he does hit the ball in the air, it's with authority, and it's, you know, and he hits it very hard. He's got some upside here. He's going. I don't have the ADP in front of me, but I'd imagine he's
275.
Yeah. See, that's a hell of a grab if you can get him. I want to find the ground ball percentage, though, because I know he hit the ball on the ground a lot. I want to back that up. But
about 40%.
40%? Yeah. See, that's a lot for a guy with no speed like Martinez. He's an athletic guy. He can play the outfield corners if he had to, so it's another avenue for at-bats. But I like this a little bit. He crushes lefties. You know, 975 OPS in September down the stretch when the Cardinals were playing meaningful games, trying to make the playoffs. And he was pretty much carrying them. He was hitting third down the stretch for them because Carpenter was banged up, and, you know, and Pham, him and it was him and Pham. If they did not get runs in, they weren't scoring because the team fell apart toward the end. But it's not unusual to see a late bloomer like this because his minor league numbers are sick. He's produced every level of the minor leagues. He just never had opportunity because he gets pegged as a first baseman with no power. So a lot of teams kind of pass over him. The Cardinals gave him a shot, and looks like we might have something here.
Yeah, I don't mind Martinez. I'm kind of skeptical on him hitting, like, on a full season, he would be projected for, like, almost 30 home runs. I'm a little skeptical there. No,
he's not going to play a full season. He's going to get rotated in and out.
For sure.
Zirko's around, so...
But I think he's a good NL-only play, and you can obviously toggle him between first base and outfield, more than likely. You're right, he does crush the ball, and I mean, I've seen him hit a good amount, and I love his approach at the plate. He kind of goes all out whenever he's hitting the ball, like he just smacks it.
He's a patient hitter, too.
Yeah, very selective, very patient. I wish he was a switch hitter, but that's kind of...
Right. And he is going to be a first base and outfield eligible in every league, 33 games at first and 40 in the outfield, so he's going to be eligible in every format. To play both, which is a nice player to have in NL only, definitely.
Yeah, but I'm on board. Like, in short, I think he makes enough hard contact to be able to be okay in the power department, despite the fact that he had a 40% ground ball rate. In the second half, he did end up kind of lifting his fly ball percentage to 34% and, you know, dropped the ground ball rate to about 40%. So, and that was in a more meaningful sample size than the first half. The BABIP was a little bit up. It was almost 380 in the second half, but regardless, I think that he's probably somewhere in the vicinity of like a 270 to 280 hitter, maybe a little bit more if he ends up getting a little bit lucky, but pretty good batting average, really good pop. Good walk rate. Like, there's a lot to like here with Martinez, and the fact that he's going so late probably presents a pretty decent buying opportunity. I don't think it's a ton of profit that you're going to net here, but I do think that there is a good amount to like in his profile. So the problem is there's guys like Matt Chapman going like right in front of him. I'm going to go Matt Chapman.
Jose Martinez is getting talked up a lot by, you know, stathead guys like Mike Petriello and stuff. So that 275 ADP will be much higher.
I think this is probably...
I think you can get up to the 220, 230 range.
Yeah, because if it's now, there, then it's a bit too rich.
With the news of Carpenter playing third base, Carpenter's going to rove around third base, first base, second base. But opening day projection, you know, has Martinez starting. That's automatically going to shoot him up.
Sure.
And it's going to cause this next guy, Jed Jerko, to fall a little bit. And I think Jerko is a good cheap source of power. He's going to play all over the diamond this year. He's got third base eligibility only right now, which normally he's a multi-position guy, so that hurts a little bit. But he played some first base last year. He's going to play some second and probably some first again this year. But, you know, he's got the approach issues. He's never going to be an OBP asset. He's going to hit around 250. He's going to hit around 25 to 30 home runs if he gets enough at-bats, just because he's a really good cheap source of power. He's hit 50 homers the last two seasons and probably wouldn't realize that. Never had 500 at-bats in a season either. So that's something
he's not consistently over 400. Consistently over 400 right. Every year.
He's a perfect reserve player, honestly. And he's even be a good NL-only player, I think, because he's going to have cheap power that's probably, you know, you don't have to pay anything for it. But don't go crazy with Jerko, because I think he's probably a kind of guy that's going to play 4 to 5 days a week, assuming no injuries, which we know there will be injuries. But you know what I'm saying. Don't, you know, go overboard on the price. Because he might be a guy you might be cutting in April if everyone stays healthy and you get frustrated and find the new hot thing coming up. But Jerko's is a decent option. You could do a lot worse than put him on your bench.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I like Jerko a lot. He's going at a really good price, 350-ish in average ADP. He crushes lefties. I know he had a 245 batting average against lefties in 2016, but two of the last 3 years he's hit 280 or better against southpaws. The walk rate was 9% or better in each of those years as well. 85% contact rate last year against lefties. So, and even against righties, he hit 255 last year. I think like his floor against righties is probably in the 240 range, which again, the league batting average is 255. Doesn't really kill you. So in a pinch, like if Jerko ends up getting full-time at bats for like 2 months of the season, he's not going to crush you. And he obviously has power. I think that 20 home runs, even despite him being a part-time player, is definitely within the realm of possibility here. His hard contact and underlying power metrics remain stable. His fly ball percentage is almost 40% each of the last 3 years. I mean, there's a good amount of power projection here, and I think that he's going to end up being relatively cheap for what you can possibly get out of him. So I like Jerko a lot based on where he's going. I have no issues with him at all. Do you want to go through some of these other guys on their bench, like Greg Garcia, Carson Kelly?
Right. We'll do Molina first.
We skipped over the catcher. There's probably not much analysis to be made with Molina, honestly. He got more aggressive last year, started jumping on fastballs, and he hit the ball really hard.
Hit the ball really hard.
His career-high homer number, and it's by a decent number. Hit the ball hard, like you said. He's always kind of the threat to go to miss a few weeks at a time just because he plays. And Mike, I'm going to ask you a question here. Does the fact that Molina plays so much as a catcher help him in fantasy, or does it hurt him? I have my answer, and...
It helps him because a 270 average over 500. Right. It's like Buster Posey. Buster Posey gets so many at bats.
He's undervalued because I think a lot of people think that, oh, he's going to get hurt. But if he gets hurt, you just catch his replaceable. You cut him, put him on the DL, pick up Carson Kelly, whatever you need to do. But Molina's going to hit in the middle of the order just because that's how the manager wants it. So he's always going to be there getting good RBI spots. And actually, he's a good situational hitter. Knows what he's doing with guys on third and second and stuff, and to try to drive him in. But I think he's the top 8 fantasy catcher for me this year. What do you think?
Well, he ended up as a top 3 catcher last year.
He's not going to do that again.
I don't believe so either. But he's a top 150 pick right now. I don't hate that price. I usually wait a little bit on catcher. If I'm going to end up going with a premium guy, I'll probably go with Sanchez or. Somebody like Posey, somebody like that, maybe
Contreras,
probably not, to be honest, because I think Molina offers pretty much the same upside. But going back to my earlier kind of point on Tommy Pham and people in general in baseball that make approach changes, a couple years ago when Matt Carpenter ended up changing his approach entirely and becoming more of a fly ball hitter, that's something that I didn't really believe fully at first, but as I see the Cardinals and their organization, and I obviously learned more that they are a StatCast group that just loves the metrics like that.
You can tell, but just how they build their roster. Randall Grichuk, they didn't get rid of him for a reason. You know what I mean?
So my main point with Molina is last year we saw an absolute change in approach when it came to him hitting more fly balls. He had a career high fly ball rate. Actually, no, 2006, he had a 39% fly ball rate. But other than that, last year was his highest of his career. His hard contact jumped to the second highest of his career as well. In my opinion, the Cardinals asked him to be a little bit more of a power hitter, and that obviously took away a little bit in batting average from 2016, but not enough that you are worried about it. It obviously equated to him having a solid batting average, almost 20 home runs. The 9 stolen bases are out of the question for this year, so you will see a dip there. But in general, I do like Molina. I think that he's going to be relatively close to what he did in 2016 area, which was about 8 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 300 average. I think that that is probably a reasonable expectation for Molina for this year.
Good call, because they might not rely on him for the much power with the acquisition of Ozuna. Pretty much the same team, but sliding a 30 homer bat in there potentially instead of Piscotty, who had all that stuff going on. So
he could lose some RBI opportunities, especially if we're expecting Carpenter to kind of rebound a bit. Then more than likely Molina will probably be more of a table setter at the 5 spot, but we'll have to see. But in general, I think that it's safe to assume that Yadier Molina will continue to be a relatively safe fantasy commodity, and there's really not a lot that I'm worried about. What about any of these bench guys? Are you interested in any other than Grichuk? Obviously, Grichuk is going to always be kind of an interesting name because of his upside and the power and speed, but is there anybody else? I'm not really a Carson Kelly fan. I think he's more of a defensive guy. Obviously, Greg Garcia is a glove-first guy.
I think Randall Grichuk is everything we said about Jed Jerko, but just outfield version. I mean,
he makes less contact, and he has a worse walk rate. But
right, but I mean, as far as the fantasy output you could get, you know what I mean? He could hit 20 home runs just if you give him 300 at-bats, you know what I mean? So that's the type of guy he is. Luke Voit, potentially, if a couple injuries strike, he's a lefty masher pretty much. But if you use him for long term, I don't think you're going to be fine. I don't think you're going to get anything out of that. I'm not a Greg Garcia guy at all. I think his OBP is propped up because he gets hit by pitches and shit because he's weird like that. Harrison Bader is a guy that gets buried, and I think he was kind of a guy I was not hoping they would trade this offseason, but
you shut your mouth.
Could be only because I think you can get a lot more for him than what they're going to utilize him as. I mean, he's a really aggressive hitter. I'll get into him more in the prospect pod, but him and Tyler O'Neill are two very exciting outfielders to have. And in this organization, they're like 6 and 7, option number 6 and 7, where they should be like 3 and 4 on a lot of other teams.
I think one or two of those guys is going to the Rays. For
Archer?
Sure. Yeah, for Archer, yeah. I think that Archer probably gets dealt in the next couple of months.
Probably
or weeks. I mean,
both of those. I guess I was reading today because Derek Gould is the Cardinals writer. He was on Twitter and stuff today. I guess, you know, the Cardinals and Rays were in discussions for a while. Supposedly the centerpiece of the deal, though, as it was announced, was the Cardinals wanted Colome. They actually wanted Archer.
Yeah, the whole time. They wanted Archer
the whole time, and Colome was kind of a peripheral piece they were negotiating. But it got far enough where they were actually talking players like that. So it could be something they revisit. Chris Archer on this team would be exactly what the doctor ordered, essentially. I mean, I think the offense is fine. The offense can compete with almost anybody, but it's the pitching staff, which we're about to cover, which I'm extremely concerned about.
If I were the Cardinals, I would be shipping off any piece I could, any pitching prospects or hitting prospects that I could to get both of them.
Right. I would send, you're a Rays fan. How about this offer? I would say, I wouldn't give you Reyes. He's off limits.
What? How dare you?
I would give, I would give you two of these three guys. It'd be Flaherty, Bader, and O'Neill. I'll give you two of those guys. Plus, the Cardinals have probably another tier of like Jordan Hicks, Ryan Helsley, Jose Adolis Garcia, Randy Arozarena, Andrew Knisner, Max Schrock, Yario Munoz, Oscar Mercado. I'll give you two of those guys.
The Rays would want two to three guys that are in the upper echelon of the minors, like the Tyler O'Neills, Harrison Bader, Zach Flaherty's.
They're all upper level. They're all double A or higher.
Yeah, they could even go for like a slight downgrade. Well, not a slight downgrade, like Michael Wacha or something. That's a pretty meaningful downgrade. Let's stop doing trade speculations because we need to like wrap this up a bit. But let's move to the pitching staff. So I guess headlining the pitching staff is Carlos Martinez. I mean, last year he ended up being a pretty decent option. Like he pretty much did what I expected him to. I think there was a little bit of regression in the ERA, but it ended up matching up with what his expected ERA was the year prior anyways. So he really didn't underperform or overperform. He did exactly what he has been doing the last couple of seasons, finally surpassed 200 innings pitched. I think that he is pretty much, if I ended up with him as like a fantasy ace for me, I would have no problem with it.
The strikeouts finally took a jump up to match the stuff. I mean, you look at him last 2016, the strikeouts fell a lot. 195 innings, only 174. 2017, he went 205 innings, which, by the way, you don't get that anymore. So anybody that can go 200 innings is automatically in the running for a fantasy one or two starter, right? I mean, just because of the volume. But he had 217 strikeouts. He finally got the changeup gives him problems sometimes. It's a nasty pitch. Sometimes he leaves it up, and he kind of had a little homer bug he had to fight. He gave him 27 homers last year, which was pretty much 1.2 per nine, which is too high for a guy with his stuff. But if you can get that figured out while keeping the games everywhere else, he is in the upper tier. He's not quite there yet, but he could be.
Are you worried about the second half? He had a 4.47 ERA and 1.38 WHIP. The home runs went up to 1.6 per nine. The home run to fly ball rate was at 22%. The control was remained consistent, but his strikeouts did go down. 58% first pitch strike rate in the second half. So like, there's a little bit to worry about here.
I have one reason for that. Cardinals were trying to make the playoffs. Their bullpen was garbage. And their manager is garbage and kept them in too long a lot. I was reading something. Carlos Martinez gave up the most runs in the league in his last inning pitched. Does that make sense? And if you, honest to God, and I read, I got to find, I'm going to retweet the article whenever the Cardinals podcast comes out. So please watch for it. It's interesting as hell. They did the math and they figured out, you know, if a league average number of those runners were scored, Martinez's 3.6 ERA would have been a 3.1.
Yeah.
Because he gave up the most runs in his last inning pitch than any pitcher in the major leagues because of his manager.
we always love Mike.
That's not
hashtag Mike.
Hashtag fucking idiot Mike. But, you know.
In general, Martinez is a strong option. There's not much to go into here. I think if you're projecting out for this year, he's going to be like a 3.5 ERA guy, strong strikeouts, strong ground ball tilt. Like, there's no real issues I find in his profile. Hopefully, his first pitch strike rate bumps back up. He did have a 59% first pitch strike rate last year, which was the second lowest in his career in his 5-year stint in the majors thus far. So, like, hopefully that ends up improving. But velocity's strong, strikeouts are strong, command strong. There's nothing really to worry about. Let's transition over to a guy that we definitely need to worry about and is pretty much on the complete opposite end. Adam Wainwright, is he fantasy viable in any way this year?
the corpse of Adam Wainwright is not fantasy viable. I think he's going to, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out of the gate strong in April because, you know, he's been hurt and puts it together for maybe a month or so stretch at a time, but he's nothing more than a desperate streamer. And that's, it's sad to say, but the strikeouts are trending in the wrong direction. The walks are trending in the wrong direction. And in this era of power, I'm surprised the home run mark wasn't more than it was for him last year. He only gave up one per nine. I'm surprised it wasn't higher. He just doesn't have it. And when he doesn't have his fastball command and doesn't have the zip on his fastball, you can sit on the curveball and it becomes a nothing pitch. So to make a long story short, he needs to be in the bullpen for them, in my opinion, if they're going to be competitive. So hopefully, I say hopefully, and I mean this in the nicest way. I hope he hits a minor injury. Flaherty comes up, pitches well. Wainwright comes back in the bullpen because I think he can be an asset there. Oh, and top it all off, he had the terrible year last year. He's coming off of arthroscopic right elbow procedure this year too, this offseason. So
yeah, his velocity dropped
hard
pretty pass. Significantly. Like
he was pitching
August,
hurt, like hurt as hell. Like yeah,
August he had an 85 mile an hour average velocity on his fastball. 90 miles per hour was what he was hitting in April. That's a problem.
And you want your pitchers to be bulldog, but not when they're liabilities.
Sure. Yeah. I agree. We've hit kind of the end of the road with Wainwright. I think that he is a streamer at times. He did have 2 months last year, May and
July. Yeah, he was awesome. Yeah.
Where he was serviceable. Like in awesome July, he was a 3.96 ERA and 1.04 whip with a pretty strong ground ball tilt. And same with April, in May. 2.64 ERA. Whip was a little high, 1.3, but like at this point, the only thing that you're banking on with Wainwright is the fact that he has remained relatively all right in ground ball rate, but he's still giving up a good amount of line drives. He's not striking out enough guys. Obviously, he had the elbow procedure. The velocity is trending down. So in short, Adam Wainwright should remain a streamer on in fantasy.
Yep, roger that.
Michael Wacha, what do you think about Wacha for this season? It's obviously been somewhat of a roller coaster ride with him throughout his career at this point. But last year, he ended up being pretty much a slightly above league average pitcher. Like, not even, really. It was kind of league average, just slightly above. Strikeouts ended up going back up again for the first time since 2013, which is obviously a pro. But and so did his first pitch strike rate. But not a lot of swing and miss. A little bit of velocity bump, but still giving up some home runs. Still looking just inconsistent most of the time. But what are you thinking for this year?
He's got a chronic shoulder issues that they're dealing with. The Cardinals have done a nice job to put him on shoulder strengthening programs all off season. He has a routine that he does now. He did it last year, and he had 166 innings. Like you said, it was above average. Strikeouts went up. He's never going to be that 190, 200 inning horse. That's just not going to happen. That's just not the type of guy that he is. I think, you know, he's been the subject of trade rumors this winter, and I really don't know how you trade a guy with shoulder injuries. Like, I shouldn't say injuries, because he has really never missed time because of it. Concerns, I guess, is a better word for it. He's never going to be that 200 inning guy, but he's still a serviceable piece. I think he's a fantasy number four or five starter for you. He should get a decent amount of strikeouts continually. And like I said, he's going to be pretty much capped at the 165 inning mark where he's at. I could see him maybe bumping up into the 170, scraping 180 range, but he's not going to throw 200.
Last year he was the 63rd starter on the ESPN Player Rater. Do you think he goes above or under that?
Slightly under.
I agree. I mean, I think that he's going to be relatively the same as what we saw last year. Maybe a little bit of a...
Just be prepared
for injuries.
Yeah, you're good.
That and the Cardinals were, you know, coming down. Every once in a while, they'll come up with, they'll give someone else a spot start and they'll give him an extra day's rest or they'll skip him. It's part of the program they do. It's frustrating because it's not really announced in time for you to do anything about it as far as fantasy and picking up somebody for the day or whatever, or the week. But just keep that in mind. They do kind of give him extra days sometimes or skip him.
Let's talk about my boyfriend for a second, Luke Weaver. He is probably the best pitcher in baseball. What do you think?
He's going to win the Luke Weaver Award. That's what they're going to name it. No, I'm just kidding. I hate the fantasy baseball community sometimes
because they take perfectly fine things like this and they blow them way out of proportion. And I'm going to have no shares of Luke Weaver this year just because the price is absurd.
You shut your mouth.
I think he's the most baffling thing for, I say baffling, the most confounding thing for me is the strikeouts have jumped so much from the minor leagues up to the majors. And I think it's completely sustainable. He kind of developed a little cutter that looks like looks like a curveball sometimes. I think it's classified as a curve sometimes, but it's a nasty little pitch he throws to get lefties out, because that was kind of the issue. And I like the profile. The Cardinals have him on a weight gaining and strengthening program this offseason. He's put on 15 pounds this offseason. And the Cardinals want him to eat 5,000 calories a day. He has to consume 5,000 calories a day this offseason. So,
was he an offensive lineman? What the hell?
Well, you've seen him. You've seen how small frame he is. 6'2", 170 is what he's listed at. And I don't even know if he was 170, to be honest with you. But did they, you know, he's done a little transformation on the mound. He's got the body language on the mound. He acts like he's like 6'6", like 220 pounds. Like, he acts like he throws inside. He's not scared to throw inside. And, like, you know, he'll yell into his glove and shit sometimes. And, like, he's kind of tries to be intimidating, but he's not, which makes it funny just because, you know, he's not that kind of guy. But there's a little bit of red flags in the profile as far as, you know, the home runs being as low as they are for a guy that, you know, pounds the zone as much as this. I'm just curious what your thoughts are. I don't where you think Weaver is. I like the kid, and I've seen him pretty much every one of his pro starts. He got a little lucky in the batted ball, but I'm going to see what you think.
Well, I already told you, Luke Weaver's my boyfriend. He's probably going to be the best pitcher in baseball. That's how I feel. I feel like we can move on. No, I love Luke Weaver. I've been touting him since before last season started.
Yeah.
We touted him in our minor league podcast, I think a couple of years ago. I think that's how far back we've been really talking about Luke Weaver. Baseball HQ, obviously the place I work for, one of the places I work for, was strong behind Luke Weaver going into last year, and I agreed with them wholeheartedly. I still agree with them. The only thing I don't agree with is his 111 ADP, and that's really the unfortunate spot here, is that he is going so high that it's going to be really hard for me to have a ton of shares of him, because flat out, like, that's his upside. His upside is where he's being drafted now, and you can't safely predict somebody to do what, you know, what he's getting drafted at right now. 111 pick overall is probably a starting pitcher 3 for you, and I think I would rather draft him as a starting pitcher 5. That's not to say that I don't think his upside is of that, because I do think that his upside is really strong. Strong ground ball hit, you talked about, his little cutter pitch that he's added on, that's really been a useful pitch for him. He does worry me with the first pitch strike rate a bit, because he is so fearless out there. I think that he assumes that his stuff is good enough that people will swing on the first pitch. But if he ends up not improving that a little bit, then we might fall into some problems, especially with the home runs and such. But as of now, I believe in the strikeout rate. I believe in his ground ball tilt. I think that he will be able to limit home runs. I like the Cardinals pitching coaches. I like that, you know, their staff at large is really strong.
Got a new pitching coach this year too, Mike Mannix.
I love Mike Maddox. I always have. He took pretty much nothing in Texas and turned it into something, and I think that he will continue to use some of these assets to the best of their abilities. But in short, I think that he's a really strong starter. If you get him at pick a 111, even though it's aggressive, I think that he won't hurt you there. I don't think that he will net a ton of profit, but I do think that he is going to be a top 30 starter this season. That's how bullish I am on him.
Wow.
I'm really bullish long-term as well. I love him long term.
There is
a little bit risk with the innings, because last year was the first time he surpassed 130 innings, only the second time that he surpassed 100 innings in the minor leagues. And that's really worrisome when, you know, despite him having this 5,000 calorie diet and, you know, tacking on 15 pounds to his frame, 200 innings is a lot. And we know what that can really do to starters. So if Weaver goes 200 innings this year, then I do firmly think he will be a top 30 starter. No questions about it. It's just really a question of whether he can get to that point this season. No matter what, young starters always have to go through adjustments, and they have to grind it through. And that's something Carlos Martinez had to go through for a few years. And that's something that Luke Weaver is going to have to do as well. But, you know, how long did it take for Martinez to get to 200 innings? It took him 5 years. That was the last year.
Martinez came up in the bullpen. The Cardinals normally put their guys up in the bullpen, and Weaver has kind of been the exception to that rule. Even Walker was up in the bullpen for a little bit.
But the safe part about it is the Cardinals are smart enough with their starters that, you know, they trended C-Mart up, And then once he hit 2015 and was a full-time starter, he had 180 innings. Then last year it was 195, and then this, or 2016 it was 195. 2017 it was 205. So they naturally progress you up that ladder, but they're not doing that with Weaver. He's been pretty much a starter.
They are extremely cautious with their starting pitchers. Remember, this is the 2016 when they played the Cubs in the, or 2015 they played the Cubs in the first round of the playoffs. They didn't have Carlos Martinez because they didn't want him to pitch anymore. He had an elbow flare up. He said he could have pitched, but the Cardinals weren't going to risk it and didn't want to pitch him. They ended up losing that series, but you know, they didn't have their ace. And they are very strict with their pitchers. That's why Reyes. We'll get to him, I guess, in a minute, probably. But you know, I'm not expecting too much out of him in the starting rotation this year. But I think that's by design. But they got Miles Mikolas to keep it short. I think he's a very nice get to at the back end of your draft. I think he's going to be a guy, a heavy command ground ball guy. Ivanova with a tad more strikeouts. What do you think?
Every time I hear his name, I think of Ricola. Mikolas.
Mikolas. I don't even know how to pronounce it, but yeah, I'm going with that. Mikolas. Yeah.
He's obviously made a few adjustments since he went over to the Japanese league and everything, and the Cardinals wouldn't have signed him to a two-year, $15 million deal if they didn't think that he could be serviceable for them. So I think that he has a pretty decent leash here to fail at times. He's going to be probably what you said, a bit of an Ivanova type. I don't think the strikeouts will be there. He probably will have like a, I don't know, Adam Wainwright-esque strikeout rate, which is not good. It's suboptimal. But I do think he'll probably be a meaningful streamer at times, and that will probably help you a bit, but he's definitely not somebody that I'm looking to target at
he'll
all.
He'll be a ratio guy.
I'm yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Do you want to talk about Jack Flaherty at all or Reyes?
I mean, if you think that there will be meaningful major league commodities, then we can.
Yeah, Flaherty will be. Flaherty came up this year. I want to say he threw something like 20-something innings in the major leagues. He didn't have fastball command. Which I don't blame you. Sometimes you get a little amped up, and it's a little bit harder to space out his name. You get a little amped up because the adrenaline flowing with the call up. He threw 21 innings, gave up 23 hits, 10 walks, 20 strikeouts. I mean, the walks are high. He's a command guy. He's got a deep arsenal. I'm really aggressive on his long term future. I think he's a very, very nice, solid mid rotation piece for a long time. I just don't know how much impact he's going to have in the positive side this year. But I like him a lot going forward.
Yeah, I like Flaherty a ton. He obviously was a bit inconsistent in 2017, but he's not. I think it's just a matter of time before he ends up getting a full-time shot here. So
he was the first-round pick the same year as Luke Weaver.
Yes. Flaherty's and I think they both will probably be staples of that rotation for a number of years. Once they get Reyes up and going, like you could see a rotation that consists of C-Mart, Reyes, Flaherty, Weaver, with maybe some Waka sprinkled in, maybe another starting pitching prospects. Flaherty's only 22. I think that he'll end up getting some time this year. Maybe not. Definitely. What would you say over under innings? What do you think?
He's the Adam Wainwright insurance. I'll say 65 innings.
Yeah, I'd say 70, 80 is what I was thinking off the top of my head. So there you go. I mean, somebody that you probably can make a midseason add on. Alex Reyes, time frame, when do you think he's coming back?
He'll be back in May. It's like May, shooting for the beginning of May.
Is he going to be in the closer?
That's the talk, since the front office is irresponsible and promises you the world and they give you a bag with shit in it. But Alex Reyes is going to be the it's fucking not going to be Luke Gregerson, I'm going to tell you that right now. Gregerson's either number one, going to lose the job because he sucks, or number two, he's just going to give up the job because he's that terrible. Because Gregerson is a joke as a closer for a team that thinks you're going to be competitive. It's going to have to be Reyes, and I hate that because I can envision this happening right now. I'm going to lay out this scenario for you, and it's going to completely fuck with Reyes this season. He's going to come back in about May. He's going to get stretched out as a starter. And, May 20th or something like that, he's going to be ready to come up, after getting a couple starts down there. He's going to come up. Wainwright's going to get hurt.
But they're already going to have put Reyes in the bullpen because there's no opening in the rotation. So he's going to be working late inning relief. Starter's going to go down. They'll have to send Reyes down to stretch him back out. And by the time you do that, his season's over.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. What they'll probably give him, what, like 70, 80 innings this year total?
I would think, yeah. But the problem with that is not all of them are going to be in the bigs because he's got to build up that arm strength.
Yeah. I mean, if he comes back at the beginning of May, like, let's be a little bit more reasonable about it. So, like, let's say he comes back in June. If he comes back in June and he's stretched out, then you can use him on a partial basis the rest of the season, essentially, and then move him down to the bullpen once the end of the season starts, maybe, like, I'd say in the September range, somewhere in that vicinity, you could probably move him down to late inning relief. I think it's a better, to be honest, I think that Greg Holland is a candidate to either go to the Cardinals. I thought the Pirates, but they just got rid of Cole and McCutcheon, so I doubt he's going to go to the Pirates. But Holland is going to go somewhere where the team is going to
I thought it would be Edison Reed, but they didn't want to pay that price, so they're not going to pay.
Went to the Twins, but trust me, Holland is going to go somewhere where he's going to be able to compete. I don't think that it's going to be the Pirates now, but I thought that they were a candidate at first. But the Cardinals are definitely in play for Holland, and you know, Gregerson, while I like him, I think that he is in for some positive regression coming into this year. I don't think that he is going to be like a star closer by any means or anything like
closers,
that. But
I hate closers that don't strike guys out.
Sure, sure. And obviously you need some strikeout guys because if you have runners on second and third with a one-run lead and one out, like you need a strikeout, and that's not something he really provides.
Looking at this team from a real baseball standpoint, I think their biggest weakness with their position players is their infield defense, right? I think that's fair.
Sure, yeah.
So you're going to have a ground ball pitcher try to lock down the game?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's why you need Holland. I tell you, Holland's going to go there.
Right. You need more strikeout upside, and I think Reyes can be that guy. But I also don't trust Mike Matheny with Reyes, who's coming off an elbow injury, who's probably the future of your franchise. There's no more important player right now to be able to reel it in. I mean, you've seen what he did to Rosenthal. You know, Rosenthal was warming up in the bullpen holding his elbow, and Matheny's calling on the phone for him to come in the game, and he did it. And now he's hurt. That's not a lie either. That's actually
I know it's not a lie.
And then, you know, they had trying to think of some of these relievers. Kevin Segrist, perfect reliever. Matheny ran him into the ground. Trash now. Seth Maness was the kind of guy like that. Ran him into the ground. Trash now. Matt Bowman's on his way. It's not a pretty thing, man. It's Matheny's bullpen, but they supposedly brought in Mike Maddux, and part of the deal with Mike Maddux was he was going to handle the bullpen.
Is there a scenario where one of these minor league guys can come up and close and Reyes can continually, I guess, gradually?
I think there's a chance. I got a couple of dark horses for saves. Tyler Lyons could be that guy because he's the best reliever in that bullpen.
Brett Cecil was pretty great last year.
Right, and Cecil's going to be my dark horse. Cecil started out terrible, and he got in such a bad hole, the fans all turned against him because he was a new guy that came in and sucked that was making big money. He was really good down the stretch that no one really talked about it. I think ultimately Brett Cecil, if you draft Gregerson in this late, you know, this late, or I say this early in the offseason, be sure to pair him with Cecil because I think Cecil might be the guy that gets that job in the long run. And we're up on the clock in RDI, and I think I want to take Cecil. But Tyler Lyons, I think, he's going to be the kind of the fireman to get the outs. Sam Tuivasa is a super dark horse for saves. I don't like the arm, but he throws 100, like upper 90s, and doesn't have another pitch, but he's getting talked up as a save candidate. And John Brebbia is a decent bullpen option. Peripherals were way out of whack with numbers he did last year. Bullpen's not pretty. It's the weakness. They're also rumored to be in discussions with Jake Arrieta, which would do a lot of good things for the pitching staff. But the Cardinals are the kind of organization, they would only sign someone like that if it was completely on their terms, and it will never be.
Yeah.
So that's just how they operate. And I don't know. As soon as we get done with this podcast, I want to read you a rant from one of the Derek Gould had a chat today. One of the fans sent him this rant, and it's fucking perfect. I would read it right now, but I don't. We'll end the podcast with this. You cool with that?
Yeah, I'm know Justin's going to kill us, but let's go.
Okay, here's the rant from a guy in his chat. Okay, I'm just going to vent a bit. Maybe I'm just an irrational fan, but I feel the Cardinals have spent the last 4 or 5 offseasons making grand claims about what they wanted to do, develop a new core, improve the offense, improve the defense, get faster, more athletic, solidify the bullpen, and then finding a way to rationalize what they have not done by using internal options that will improve the offense, internal options will improve the defense. Fowler's weak defense will be augmented by having Grichuk in left, etc. More baffling, the financial risks they were willing to take were always on a low ceiling on non-centerpiece guys, Mike Leake, Dexter Fowler, Brett Cecil, rather than potential superstars. They have spent a lot of money on guys that are, at best, complementary pieces, even though they didn't have a centerpiece to build around. I thought the Ozuna move would signal a change, but the approach to the pitching staff seems to be more of the same posturing and then rationalization. I don't want to be that guy, but at a certain point, I just don't understand their approach. Hearing about all the financial and young asset resources the Cardinals have to acquire talent is getting old when they seem afraid to use those resources to leap back into the field of true contenders again. Fair enough. I think I agree 100% of that.
How often
We got this new TV deal. We're getting $70 million this year. Then we got $50 million more from the MLB AM. We got all these prospects. We can trade for anybody. You only get Marcell Ozuna because the Marlins feel bad because they strung you along for Stanton and didn't want you to file grievances for stringing them along, knowing he wasn't going there, knowing that he wasn't on Stanton's list and not telling the Cardinals. So in order to keep the goodwill with the team they share a spring training complex with, they gave up Ozuna for minimal prospects that the Marlins already dug into in case Stanton changed his mind.
So to be fair, the offseason is nowhere near done, and the season will probably have a ton of trading, in my opinion. There will be a lot of activity.
Right, and then the general manager makes a quote and comes out and says there's no team in the National League Central that's head and shoulders above the rest. I'm just kind of wondering what team he watches that lives in Chicago, because that team's head and shoulders above this team, and it's not close.
I disagree. I think that the Cubs have a lot of warts themselves, but I digress. We need to wrap this up. So, Matt, once again, tell everybody where you can be reached and everything, what you're working on.
MD Tomp FWFB, doing the prospect pieces. Listen to the Cardinals pod after this. So it's a good system. A lot of entertaining guys, and the best part about that system is there's a lot of guys that are major league ready or close to it. So they have more depth in the upper minors, I think, than any team in the league. A lot of other teams have the depth in the lower levels, but the Cardinals are in the upper levels. Check out the draft guide. Check out all the other team previews we got. You know the routine by now.
Yes, great job on the prospect minutes. They're always really informational, short, little nuggets. I love them. I love them to death. You and I will get back on the prospect show here pretty soon and kind of do that every other week. Yeah, we'll definitely spit some fire there. And I'll be on Baseball HQ this year doing my daily matchups column. The draft guide's coming out, like you already mentioned, Matt. We have the team previews kind of rolling on here. And just check out everything on the site. We have a lot of stuff going on. So brand new list of writers and content for you. It's all great. Please leave us a rate and review.
Things be popping over here.
Yes, and get up terms.
I told you this. That was rude. I told you this podcast would be over an hour.
Yeah, I know. All right. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in your drafts.